Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What's up, Foos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial.
From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now, back to the courtroom.
Do you swear affirm under penalty of law that the testimony you'll give in this case will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, have a seat, talking to the microphone. Thank you.
Okay, sir, good afternoon. Can you please tell the jury your name again?
Frank Lewis Blair Kuski III.
Where do you currently reside?
Carmel Valley, California.
And what do you do for a living, sir?
I'm managing director of Blair Financial Group, Money Managers.
I want you, outside of your management and Blair Financial, to tell the jury about your experience with period firearms.
Yes. Let me check a note to make sure dates are correct. I took part in my first movies in this, which were done with...
And I'm not talking about the movies.
I'm sorry, okay.
Yeah, let me just try to center my question.
I'm still objecting.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Kuski, if I can just direct that a little more. I want to go just give the jury an overview of your experience with firearms. And not necessarily getting into movies yet, but your experience with firearms and period firearms and how you obtain that familiarity.
Do you wish for the long explanation or the short?
No, the short. The short's always better.
My father was a combat MP in the Second World War. I was shooting almost from birth. I was sent to rifle camp in Butte, Montana at age 6, which is hard to imagine. I grew up around a hunting family. My grandfather was a big-time hunter. I grew up hunting deer and pheasants with my uncle in the forests of Ohio. I had Ohio and Indiana and Pennsylvania hunting licenses ever since they were required. I was a member. I was a Boy Scout riflery merit badge winner. I worked. was a member of the Kenyon College rifle team. Following graduation from Kenyon College, I took up firearms in a very serious way, beginning collecting and shooting. I was trained by Louis Tenenbaum, essentially right out of college, who's a member of the U.S. Army Marksmanship Unit, who thought I was worth taking his time with that. I appeared in a number of little television shorts and things like that through that time period, and when I really got going on primitive firearms, and I won't even talk about self-defensive guns at this point, I was trained in combat guns. I first appeared in the George Washington television miniseries in 1984, and I was assigned my role as a surveyor in the wilderness, and of course, I had my first real flintlock in my hands at that time. During the earlier times, had shot a lot of primitive weapons, primarily flintlocks. Black powder stuff, was very interested in that. After that, I got going and I joined a group called the 1st American Regiment in 1985, which was the premier late 18th century, early 19th century reenactors for military reenactment. And during this time, and I believe you have a nice picture of me firing cannons, I became a sergeant of artillery doing reenactment big time. And in that capacity, I appeared in lots of movies. I fired artillery. This is 18th century artillery. I fired the 1812 Overture with Cincinnati Symphony in various performances in big stadiums and things. I also Sorry for the cough. I also answered questions for NBC Nightline fairly routinely on weapons identification because, of course, I'm fairly good expert in Russian weapons and one of the largest collectors in the United States. I took part with 1st American Regiment in many, many, many different film productions, television productions, that sort of thing, which were done by PBS and I believe the History Network. These were shown at the time on television and also became educational movies programs. They sold the rights to us, charging with bayonets to all kinds of ad agencies.
Okay, let me stop you for a second, because there's a lot of information.
Well, and, I'm sorry.
No, it's that's okay. But I want to ask you, in the course of that, and you've had a whole lifetime, is that fair to say?
Yes, it is.
Have you been a collector also of period-type weapons?
Yes, very much so.
Okay. Are you familiar with the revolver, in this case, the 45 long Colt?
Absolutely.
Did you bring with you today that revolver? Not that revolver, but a revolver just like that revolver?
Yes, we would call it a sister. It is made by Pieta, the same exact company. It was nearly sequential serial numbers. It is absolutely identical. Any part would interchange, and it will look exactly like the Baldwin gun.
Did you also bring a replica gun with you?
Yes, I did.
And can you tell the jury just, first of all, what that is?
This is a Denex replica. Denex is a company in Spain that makes replicas of anything from shotguns to antique weapons to swords, things like that. They're used by reenactors. They're used in movies. There was a Denex revolver on the set of Rust that was used as one of the dummy guns. There were, in fact, 10 non-firing replica guns on the set that looked like this. So it can't shoot, but it looks like it. It functions. It cocks. The cylinder turns. And from 5 feet away, you couldn't tell unless you really looked.
Okay, sir. Yes, I was going to ask at this time, Your Honor, if I could tender him as an expert in the categories I previously did.
Well, why don't you state them on the record again?
I was making sure I had the exact wording. Is that okay if you wrote those down? Because I don't want to change it. Well, I'll just say it again. It's firearm identification, firearm functioning, reloading of ammunition, and identification of ammunition of dummy rounds and live rounds.
Any objection?
No objection within the confines of what we discussed at the bench.
All right, thank you.
Yes, I understand. So, sir, if you will, I'm sorry.
For these specific areas, subject to the ruling up at the bench. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Sir, if you will, if you could have her, the deputy handles this, but if you could retrieve the firearms from behind you.
I do it in public, and I will clarify that it is not loaded. Okay, the first is a real...
Mr. Kuski, are you able to take the cylinder out so you can show everyone also that it's unloaded?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Something important. And here is a Denex revolver.
So, Your Honor, I'm going to object.
All right, first of all, everybody's nervous because you have not demonstrated to us that they are unloaded. So before you start showing us the weapons, make sure they're unloaded, including that one that you just touched.
Okay, Mr. Kuski, I want to make sure that, first of all, the Denex is the replica that's non-firing. That is obviously clear. It cannot fire, correct?
Yes. I wish to demonstrate...
Okay, but let me lead the question.
Sure.
The other Pieta, you cleared with the deputy, but I want you to be able to take that cylinder out so we can show everyone it's clear. Is that...
Absolutely.
Okay.
Guns pointed in the safe direction.
Now, if we can get this pin out... Cylinder is retained by a pin.
Once that pin is removed, the gun may be put in a partially cocked position. The cylinder may be pushed out, and again, the barrel's safe. You can look right straight through it. Sir, would you take that and show them all? It's empty. Is that acceptable?
It's up to the court.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
No, the deputy's not involved in this.
Okay.
Case.
And so
it is empty. I demonstrated it's empty.
Okay.
May I return it to the firearm?
Yes. Okay, sir, now the first thing I want to ask you, comparing the Denix, the replica, to the real, the Pieta, do they share some of the same characteristics?
Yes, they do.
And can you tell the jury, is the Denix made to look like the Pieta?
Absolutely.
And side by side, if you can, and Your Honor, may he step down to show the jury?
Yes.
Okay. Sir, if you can show them the Pieta and the Denix side by side, just so they can see.
This is a Denix. It is a replica, totally unfiring with a blocked barrel. It functions completely like the regular revolver. The cylinder turns, it will cock, it will snap and fire. It's unable to fire any ammunition. It's used as a replica, it's made of metal, and it functions just like a single action Army Colt, but it can't fire. I'll bring the next one, and then we'll compare them. Next gun, in the same position. This is a Pieta revolver. This is the sister gun to the Baldwin gun. It's a 45 caliber single action 1873 revolver, like was issued to Custer's troops. It is a true 45 long Colt. We call it just Colt. And it was designed for the U.S. Army to be able to kill a man and a horse. And it was the most popular firearm in Western movies.
Thank you, Mr. Kuski, if you could.
Now, may I show the two together?
Yes, if you will just show, not with testimony, but just showing them.
I'll reverse them.
Mr. Kuski, in your review as an expert in this case, are you aware whether there was a Denix revolver like that on set, on Rust?
Yes, there is. It was covered in the invoices as rented by Rust Management.
Now, not demonstrating at this point, but can you tell the jury, based on what you just showed them on the Pieta, how you safely decock that firearm when you get it cocked?
You wish me to pick up the gun and show how it is decocked? I would prefer first showing on a Denix to them,
yes,
and then on a live.
Just show.
One.
Don't
you object to any touch?
Okay, Mr. Kuski, if you will, using the Denix, the replica, demonstrate that the cocking and proper decocking of that weapon.
Yes. This is one of the primary things that an individual must be trained in to safely cock and decock a Colt revolver or a replica. Now first, the finger has to stay off of the trigger and outside of the trigger guard, no matter what. That's the essential rule of safety. The firearm is cocked with your thumb, you see. Finger's still outside of the trigger. No one touches any trigger. This is now a gun capable of being fired. Now, the first thing I do here is put my thumb on top of it. If I'm not real strong, I put two thumbs on. Notice my finger is still completely off the trigger. I then slowly, gently pull the trigger and lower the hammer onto the cartridge. I then back it up to its safe position. Now I will demonstrate the same thing exactly with the real Pieta revolver. Okay, we have Pieta safely aimed. My finger is off the trigger. You can see this is where it has to stay. If your finger's in there, you can't decock safely. Now, again, we cock 1, 2, 3, 4. COLT, the clicks. This is a cocked, ready to fire revolver if it were loaded. My finger must stay out of the trigger guard and on the side. Now, I put my finger in, but I don't put it in until I put my thumb here. Even putting it in before, like that, would cause it to fire, perhaps. Now, I'm holding the hammer back. I can feel the spring. Everything's safe. Now my finger goes on the trigger, pulls the trigger, slowly lowers to a safe position without snapping, and then pulls back to the safety notch, which removes the firing pin from the cartridge. Notice my finger is out of there again, not that the gun is cocked. And that's the only decocking. A guy doing this experience can do it with his thumb, because this is all knurled here, so it can't slip. Finger's out of there. I decock safely.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you for demonstrating that. And I wanted to ask you with regard to that operation. In this particular case, we're dealing with a movie set, obviously.
Yes.
Do the general rules of firearm safety, including the demonstration you just did, do they apply equally on movie sets?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, in your work as an expert in this case, reviewing all the information, did you agree with Mr. Haig's conclusion regarding violation of some of those safety rules?
Absolutely. Okay.
Now, I want to ask you, I want to switch topics. I want to ask you about reloading. There's been some testimony about an inertia puller.
Yes.
And if you could tell the jury what an inertia puller is.
An inertia puller is basically a type of hammer that pulls bullets out of loaded cartridges when you have a misfire or you wish to disassemble old ammo. Basically, it has a plastic head about this big. It has a handle on it like a hammer. They cost about $12. You put the cartridge, which could be any kind of cartridge, old dead cartridges, whatever you got, and you put it in, clamp it down with a little device, close the thing up. There'll be an empty space underneath, and there'll be a ring here holding the cartridge in metal, and you bang it on a table, and the bullet is pulled out. That the bullet, remember, is the lead part, not the case, and the bullet will fall out. If there's powder, that will fall out as well. You then get a bullet, ka-ching, you have powder, which you can pour out, and you have a case, which may or may not be live primed, or, you know, maybe a good primer, maybe a rechargeable case, maybe anything that happens to be there.
Okay, so Mr. Kuski, if you wanted to reload a round, let's say you want to convert a dummy round to a live round, what are the steps in the reloading process?
Well, this is really extremely technically difficult, and the way it begins is you have to have, suppose it is a dummy. This is a beat-up old piece of old brass that happens to have a dummy bullet in it. It has a dead primer in it. So what you start is you pop out the bullet. You see there's no powder. Now you turn over the case, put the bullet aside. The case is filthy. The case is all grody and nasty from sitting around. It has to go in a machine called a tumbler. Every reloader worth its salt has a tumbler. It's about this big. Sometimes it's a ball, sometimes it's a drum. It's filled with generally powdered walnut, and it's got a motor, and it spins and spins and spins as a polishing machine. And at the end of that time, you come out with brass that looks somewhat better than it started because it's knocked off some of the crud. You then wipe that down smooth. You then have to have a tool which is called a reloading press. I have a photograph, if you wish to see, of a reloading press. Would that be acceptable? You then have a reloading press. The reloading press, as one of its functions, is to get that old dead primer out. Remember, the primer's in the little hole in the bottom of the brass you're holding. This press has a big lever. It has a special pin designed for that cartridge to remove the primer, because if it went the other direction, you'd bang the cartridge up. But there's one more tool you must have, and that's called a shell carrier or a little shell holder. And that's sized exactly for the diameter of the rim of the cartridge you're going to take apart. So a 45 couldn't take a 380 or something like that. Has to be a 45. Slide in that so it holds, it's completely solid. Put this in your press, line it up over the top, and pull. And when you pull, that pin will drive out the primer. It chinks. Now you've got a case with no primer in it. It's shined up as best as your material can do. Now we get to the good part. You have to put a new primer in. First, you have to have a new primer, and they're very, very hard to get in much of the markets because they've been just grabbed up. So you take this tiny little primer, you put it in a tool called a priming tool. This may be part of your press, or it may be an independent machine. And this will hold the primer safely. Again, it has to be for your cartridge. You have to put that little shell holder in. You put the shell, which is empty, the empty case, slide it into the holder, pull the lever, and the primer, which is quite explosive, is pressed carefully flat up into the exact right position. And if you didn't have the shell holder and all the right gear, you couldn't do it. The primer would blow up the minute it was hit, but it's safe this way. Now you've got a case, and that case is certain to get to be a live case. And it would be called a live case. It has a live primer, nice shiny case. You then put that in your press and go to the next stage. I have the press. You stick it in that ever-present shell holder again. It holds it perfectly, immaculately straight. You then have on your press something called a sizing die. And a sizing die costs about $55, fits in presses. You adjust that properly, which takes some skill, and you pull. The sizing die goes right over the top of the case and makes it the right size, because an old dummy isn't the right size. It jam up in your gun, wouldn't take a bullet, piece of junk. Once it's sized, there's a little ball inside, pulls it up, and that very neatly expands the top of the case. And without that expansion, you can't put a new bullet in. So now we've got a nice expanded case with a nice live primer in it. Looks pretty darn good. It's all sized to the right size. The mouth is expanded. Now you got to have a powder measure, and you have to have the right powder. You can't just use any old gunpowder. There are literally dozens and dozens. It has to be the acceptable powder for a 45 load and measured. If you get too much, you blow up. Literally, it'll blow up the gun, blow up in your face, and everybody knows about that. Put too little in, you get something called a squib, where it pushes the bullet into the barrel where it sticks. That's what killed Brandon Lee, was a stuck bullet. And now you've got the right amount of powder. Now to measure that powder, you need either a powder scoop of the right size, and they make dozens, so you'd say, okay, I want one for that powder for that round. And you scoop it out. That's pretty fast. That's the old way. The new way is something like what I have, and these are computer-driven, perfect measures that will get within 1 grain of powder. They're computer-driven trickle chargers. They cost about $300. They're real fancy. Put in the powder, put in the exact grains of weight that you want that powder to be, press a button, and a little tiny tray fills up, and you dump it into the cartridge through a little funnel. Now you've got powder, you got primer, you got a good case. You take your bullet and you put it on side, on the top. But you need one more tool for your press, and that is a die that fits that bullet. And so you put in the die, everything's sitting there. You pull the big lever and puts pressure straight exactly down to push the bullet in exactly as deep as you want it to go. And after it's in there, the die that you've purchased, which is another expensive toy, presses on the outside of the case and puts what's called a crimp on it. And that case now has the bullet seated on top of the powder, the exact correct depth, which you know through measurements and books, and it squeezed real tight. Otherwise, the bullet would just fall out. Or the first time you fired the gun, the bullet would just flop out on the other cartridges. It must be crimped tight.
So, and Mr. Kuski, that is an enormous amount of steps, correct?
Yes.
And I appreciate that complete explanation, because would you agree that it's not sufficient to just have an inertia puller
no.
to accomplish all those steps?
No. Okay. It's useless.
Okay. And with all of that required for reloading, you've described the components of a live bullet. Are you also in agreement with the FBI that you cannot tell a live round from a dummy?
Yes.
With a picture?
In a picture, absolutely not.
Did you, I know in the course of your expert work, you were able to watch
portions of the trial and pay attention. Did you see in any of the videos or any of the pictures any of this type of reloading equipment you've been talking about?
Well, I believe in Seth has a tumbler, I think I saw in the back, which is what you polish up brass with for reloading. I saw...
Action Foundation. I'm sorry, I'm just having an issue with my shoe. Pardon me.
Sirin, let me ask you on a different topic with regard to the dangers of intermixing live and dummy ammunition. Can you tell the jury if those are stored in the same place? Is that potentially dangerous?
And I will object if we can approach, please.
Jakuski, do you regularly, as a gun collector, gun owner, everything, do you regularly have interaction with different types of ammunition?
Yes, I do.
And does that include live ammunition and dummy ammunition?
Yes, it does.
And do you, with regard to the dummy ammunition, do you teach individuals safe, proper gun safety?
Absolutely. I'm an NRA certified pistol instructor.
And as part of that, do you sometimes use dummy rounds in your teaching with them?
Yes, I do.
In that capacity, have you become familiar with various types of dummy ammunition?
Yes, I do.
And are you familiar with various types of live ammunition?
Yes, I am.
Do you store live ammunition, or do you have a place to store live ammunition yourself?
Yes, I do.
And do you have a place to store dummy ammunition yourself?
Yes, I do.
Are you familiar with whether there are any dangers of storing those together?
Absolutely.
And why would that be?
There are two sides of the danger. One easy to see, and that is if a live round somehow found its way in with look-alike dummy ammunition, you would have a very severe chance of having somebody getting killed. Now, the flip side is perhaps equally dangerous, though less visible. If I'm hunting Russian wild boar, which I hunt with a handgun in California, and I go to shoot at a Russian wild boar that weighs 325 pounds and it's coming right at me, and the gun goes click because I substituted a dummy, I will be the dead one. So yes, both sides are bad.
Absolutely. And with regard to your storage of ammunition, is it important to have an inventory system?
Yes, I have an inventory system for all my ammunition, all my powder, all of my reloading, which goes into dozens of different kinds of rounds.
And in the course of your reloading, did you become aware that in 2021 timeframe, was it difficult to purchase primers?
Yes, we called the great ammo shortage, and there was, for a variety of reasons, a huge run on ammunition. You couldn't get primers to reload. You know, they just didn't happen. You couldn't get them. You go to the store, couldn't get them. You couldn't get even 9mm ammo. You couldn't get almost anything. The store shelves were emptied out. People were hoarding powder, even my long-range rifle stuff. I couldn't get powder. So, yes, that was called the great ammo shortage, and to a certain extent, it still goes on.
Now, during your course as an expert in this case, you heard Mr. Haig's testimony. Do you agree with his conclusion that the live rounds found on set were reloads?
Yeah, well, hand loads. A reload means that it's an old case reloaded. He was very...
Objection. Let's approach.
Mr. Kuski, is it your opinion that from your viewing them, that the live rounds on set were reloads or hand loads?
Yes, it is.
And would you explain what you saw, the quality, were they lower quality in your opinion?
Lower quality than what?
In terms of store-bought round from a major manufacturer or something like that, or do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I believe they were less consistent than that of a major manufacturer. Meaning, and I can expound on that if you wish.
Yes.
Okay. When you get...
I'm going to object again to Lynn's approach.
Okay, Mr. Kuski, so your opinion is that these are hand loads?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you understand also as an expert in reviewing the information in this case, there are a variety of different types of dummy rounds on set? There were a variety?
Yes.
Okay. And did that include some that rattled, some that did not rattle, and some with a hole in the side?
Yes.
Okay. Did you also review evidence in this case of Mr. Baldwin not only being dangerous at the time of the actual tragic shooting, but dangerous at other times on set?
Objection.
Okay, sir, my full question was going to be, did you see evidence that Mr. Baldwin was not safe with firearms after there was a yell of cut in a particular scene and he shot a blank after that scene?
Yes, I feel that's unsafe.
Okay. One further question. Are you familiar with the period weapon called a Henry rifle?
Yes, I am.
Are you familiar whether if that is loaded or unloaded at the bottom of that rifle, whether somebody could see whether there was rounds at the bottom of it, if they're just looking?
Yes, a Henry, may I go into detail? A Henry rifle is a predecessor to the Winchester. Mr. Henry actually invented the Winchester. It is a rifle with a very long barrel, doesn't have a handguard under, which was a problem. It's loaded from the top in a kind of a weird way, and the ammunition, the cartridges are dropped in into a long tube where a spring pushes them down. One of the biggest disadvantages, and this was in the Civil War, is it has a long open side on it, beneath the barrel, where you can actually look in and see all the loaded cartridges. Now, they thought that was a really good deal until they got in the mud of the trenches and the cartridges were all jammed. Right now, if you look at a Henry, anybody who knows anything about Henrys looks at that Henry and says the whole side's open and you can see ammunition in there, dummies, whatever. And if you don't have that, they're going to be laughing because it looks like an empty rifle.
Finally, sir, the last question I want to ask you, with regard to, there was some criticism in the trial, one point of Ms. Gutierrez-Reed holding a shotgun with it pointed in front of her. And is there, do you have an opinion on that with regard to, for example, military drill?
Yes, I do.
Objection.
Sir, I'm going to yet another objection, withdraw that question, and that's all the questions I have.
Cross-exam.
Mr. Kuski, do you agree with me that basic gun safety requires that the handler of the gun not point the gun at anyone?
If it's a real gun, yes.
Do you agree with me that while you were sitting here in the courtroom, you pulled out a gun and you pointed it at the judge?
I do not.
You disagree?
I pointed the gun into this space up here, never directly at the judge.
Do you agree that basic gun safety requires that you keep the muzzle of the gun pointed down for safety?
Not at all. A gun may be pointed, as any hunter education class like I taught, may be pointed up, may be pointed back, may be pointed cross arms, as in the military, may be pointed at the ground, may be put in something like a military stance, such as order arms with the butt on the ground and the piece right under your arm. So, no. And to further, in a cross draw or any of the...
No, I'm not talking about a cross draw, thank you. Do you agree that when you pulled that firearm out and pointed it in the direction of the judge, the deputy standing next to you had to intervene and grab the gun and point it down?
I don't object.
Mr. Mr. Kuski, have you ever been qualified as an expert in firearm safety in a court of law?
No.
Have you ever worked on criminal cases before?
Yes, I have.
Have all of the cases that you've, the criminal cases that you've worked on, has Mr. Bowles been the attorney in all of them?
Not at all.
Not at all?
No.
Give me a moment, please. Let me clarify my question. Have you worked on criminal cases related to the securities industry?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Other than, and you're an investment banker, correct?
Not exactly, but sufficient name for it.
Okay. And other than working on criminal cases having to do with securities, do you agree with me that the only other types of criminal cases you've worked on have all involved Mr. Bowles?
I do not.
Isn't it true, sir, that you provided a pretrial interview in this case on November 29th, 2023?
Yes.
And isn't it true that during that interview, my investigator, Mr. Rice, asked you, is Mr. Bowles the only attorney that you've worked with? And your response was, outside of the securities industry in the past, yes.
Yes, and I have worked since then, and I have worked prior to that confidentially with cases before the United States Navy and other cases which were criminal, and I believed you were speaking only of what's going on here. If you'd like to hear the other ones, I'm very happy to tell you. I worked, for example, with the Monterey Sheriffs.
Is there a question?
No, there isn't. There is not a question on the table right now. You gave a lengthy description about how a person could turn a dummy round into a live round. You recall the testimony that you gave moments ago.
Yes.
I want to talk to you about doing the opposite, okay? I want to talk to you about taking a live round and turning it into a dummy round.
Okay.
Okay? Do you agree with me, sir, that the first step is you would place the live round in the inertia puller and smack it so that the projectile separates and the powder comes out?
Yes.
And at that point in time, you are left with an empty casing, a projectile, a pile of gunpowder. But the problem with your casing is that it still has a live primer, right?
That's right.
So in order to make the primer inert, you can take that empty shell casing with that live primer, you can put it into a firearm, and you can fire it.
Correct.
And now I've made the primer inert.
There is another way if you wish to hear.
No, I appreciate you, though. But
thank you. Yes, I agree.
You agree that what I'm saying, it can be done.
Can be done.
And then after I've fired it and I've heard the pop, knowing that the primer has now been made inert, I can take that projectile and I can just put super glue on it and stick it back into that casing.
Well, you couldn't normally without expanding the case. That's what I was talking about when you do a sizer. You could expand the case with a sizer because what's going to happen in many cases, and I can't say every one because I've never done super glue, is it's very difficult to get a bullet into a case that hasn't been expanded and sized. You could try it. I can't guarantee it'll work.
Sure. I mean, you can take the empty shell casing and you can put it on top of a projectile and you can take your inertia puller or a hammer and just tap it
An inertia puller is made out of plastic. It is not for tapping anything down. But you could take a hammer, but what's very likely to happen is you'll bend the case beyond all use and recognition and it can't fall in. That's why you expand cases in the process. You could try it. I've never beaten any bullets. Some bullets are very, very hard. Some are soft. So it is possible with a soft lead bullet that you could maybe not bend your case and maybe not shave off your bullet. Possible.
And isn't it true, sir, that the live ammunition found on the set of Rust in fact had soft lead bullets?
I didn't measure the lead, so there's something called a
I appreciate your response. In fact, sir, you have never actually viewed the live rounds that are in evidence. You've only seen pictures of them, isn't that correct? So you haven't taken them and looked at them, right?
No, I've taken all the pictures and looked. That's it.
Okay. But you watched the testimony of our expert, Mr. Haig.
Yes, I did.
And isn't it true that Mr. Haig testified that the projectiles from the live rounds found on the set of Rust were soft lead?
I didn't hear soft, but lead, certainly.
They weren't copper jacketed, correct?
No, not copper jacketed.
And he also testified that because they were lead, and lead is a soft metal, that's the reason that that projectile became so damaged when it went through Ms. Hutchins and into Mr. Souza.
Absolutely. That's called ballooning.
All right. Thank you, sir. You testified on direct examination that you can't tell a live round from a dummy round in a photograph.
Simply in a photograph. I agree with Mr. Haig, who said the same thing.
Well, do you agree with me that you can tell a live round from a dummy round in a photograph if that dummy round has a hole drilled into the casing so it can't have any gunpowder?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, sir. And in your review of the case materials, sir, you understand that live ammunition from PDQ Props was sent to the FBI, and it was determined to be substantially different than the live rounds found on the set of Rust.
I do.
You gave an opinion earlier that you believe that the live rounds were hand loads.
Yes,
I do. You recall that?
Yes.
And I just want to be clear. You're giving that opinion just from looking at photographs, not from going to the evidence room, taking the evidence, handling it in the way that Mr. Haig did.
Yes, and from Mr. Haig's testimony as well.
Okay. I'll pass the witness.
Governor, I don't have any follow-up questions.
This witness is excused. Thank you.
May you help me with these?
Jury, we're going to finish for the day. You can expect closing arguments to commence tomorrow morning, not right away. The defense is still putting on their case, but when the defense is finished, then we will do closing arguments, and they anticipate that it will be sometime in the morning that we will get to closing arguments, okay? So please don't talk among yourselves or anyone else about the evidence received here in court. Don't do any research or online Googling about the Rust production or this trial. Thank you. We'll see you at 8:30.
More raw courtroom audio from the Rust Alex Baldwin movie shooting trial is on the way.
Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment.
From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.